This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Thanks for joining me today. We're going to take 2 hours and talk about some of the things that matter most. You might remember a few weeks ago we talked with Dr. Ashley Fernandez about the Ohio Nurses Association. This is a union of about 11,000 nurses in the state of Ohio. They recently endorsed legalizing assisted suicide and committing themselves to educating the public about medical aid in dying. So at that time we said we're going to have to talk to see just how, find out how representative this group is. Well, we've since found out that they represent a relatively small percentage, I think 10% of Ohio nurses. We're going to talk today with Janet Mundy about the Association of Catholic Nurses and take a look at the way they are thinking about changes in the nursing world. Also today, we're going to look at a recent survey. EWTN and Real Clear Opinion have teamed up, and they've taken a look at Catholics and the election. We're going to find out how Catholics see themselves, what they think of Catholic teaching, how many people accept all that the Catholic Church teaches, how many people reject, what percentage of people reject it, and how that might play into political attitudes. Matthew Bunsen will be joining me. We're going to talk about Mr. Rogers. He's well known for his song, I Like You As You Are. Rogers, though, was a fierce in his beliefs that all people deserve love. This was not mere sentiment. It came directly from a robust Christian faith. Shay Tuttle will talk to us about Mr. Rogers and the new interest in him. And then we'll also talk with Brad Hahn of Solidarity HealthShare about new healthcare rules that are supposedly forcing insurers to disclose costs. But first, today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, December 11th. It's the Feast of St. Damascus. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile. More information on December specials at CharityMobile.com. California Attorney General Javier Becerra wants California's 12 Catholic dioceses to hand over additional reports in an ongoing investigation into past sexual abuse of children. California law requires that all teachers, priests, and school staff must report any sign of abuse to local law enforcement. In a statement, Bishop Jaime Soto said the Sacramento Diocese has already provided a number of documents to Becerra's office. President Trump is dismissing the impeachment charges against him. During a campaign rally in Pennsylvania yesterday, Trump called the charges flimsy, pathetic, and ridiculous. He said he's only facing abuse of power and obstruction of Congress charges because House Democrats want to win the 2020 election. The Justice Department's independent inspector general is being pressed about his report on the origins of the Russia investigation.
The report that my office released this week is the product of a comprehensive and exhaustive review.
Michael Horowitz told a Senate hearing that the FBI probe was not fueled by political bias against Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. He did, though, note numerous procedural errors and omissions by the FBI in the early days of the investigation and said they raised, quote, civil liberties concerns. Senator Lindsey Graham seized on those findings, calling it, quote, a mountain of misconduct. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says he wants to see an increase in inflation before the Federal Reserve Board raises rates.
My colleagues and I decided to leave our policy rate unchanged after lowering it a total of 0.75 percentage point at the previous three meetings. As always, we base our decisions on judgment of how best to achieve the goals Congress has given us, maximum employment and price stability.
The board indicates that they'll leave interest rates alone as long as current market conditions continue. I'm T. Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. The Department for Health and Human Services announced last month two rules that require hospitals and insurers to publicly disclose the cost patients actually pay for health care and doctor visits and prescription drugs. You have to ask yourself why this hasn't been the case, but it hasn't been the case, and consequently, the whole idea of pricing for medical services has been, you know, often appears arbitrary, unclear, confusing. This increased information should help spur competition, should lower costs of health care. And joining me right now to talk about it is Brad Hahn. Brad is a deeply committed Catholic who helped found Solidarity Health Share with Chris Faddis. And Brad now serves as the ministry CEO. He's a member of the Arizona Bar, the Canon Law Society of America, the Catholic Medical Association, and is an allied attorney with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Brad, good to have you here again.
Yes, thank you, Al. Great to be on.
So tell me, this is actually big news, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very big news. And I think the reason you know it's big news is because after these rules about transparency were prescribed through regulation by the Trump administration, hospital systems and insurance companies filed a lawsuit to prevent them from going into effect.
Wow.
And so that should tell you a lot how who wants transparency in this country, Al.
You know, this it's amazing to me that, and you've told these stories before, and I want to hear them again. It's amazing to me that people tolerate this system where you don't get a chance to shop, if you will, for these various services. And why don't you give us an example? We've talked about this before, but I think it's important to just give some concrete examples of how challenging these prices leads to much better outcomes.
Yeah, you know, we've been seeing from our experience here at Solidarity is just no one knows what health care costs in this country. You know, the consumer is by far so far removed. Insurance companies and hospital systems that don't know. And I'll just give you a classic example here is we had a woman who was a member of Solidarity. She had gallbladder surgery and she had some minor complications. It was an outpatient procedure. And the Medicare rate, if she was on Medicare, it would have been about $22,000. This hospital, which was a non-profit Catholic hospital, billed this woman $234,000. Which is basically 1,000% what Medicare would have paid. And so right then, we issued a check and made it an eligible medical expense for sharing of $35,000, which was roughly about 160% what the hospital received on Medicare. They basically ripped up the check and billed the client, the member, for the full $234,000. So, and threatened to go to collections and everything like that. Well, by the time we got involved again and had these more conversations, 6 months goes by, and they ended up settling for the $35,000, the amount we offered them from the very beginning. So this in turn just shows just, especially with cash pay, self-pay patients, they're at a real disadvantage in this country. And some of these stories leading up to bankruptcies and such like that are really a real factor right now. And that's what we do at Solidarity is we step in and on behalf of our members to try to get fair and just pricing and for their medical care.
I'll ask you just a very basic question. Why? Why is this done, and why is it tolerated?
Well, I would go back to the Reagan administration years, Al, and you remember how the Pentagon was paying, you know, $750 for a hammer and toilet seats and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's who won there? You know, the contractors won, and they're just lining their pockets. And it's the same thing with the health industry today. Who's making the most money? It's not the doctors. You know, it's the insurance companies and the big hospital systems that are making the money. And so if they can keep things opaque and confusing for the consumer, you know, and those on health insurance, they can make more money. And that's what it comes down to is that. And so what we're trying to do is trying to get the word out there, especially to our members, and we're approaching 10,000 families nationwide now that are members of Solidarity, is, you know, there's a different way. You have basically two options now. You can participate in this game, what they do, overpay for your health care through health insurance, or if you want to fight a little bit and have some confrontations, like we had here trying to help this woman, you can really save on your medical costs just by demanding fair and just transparent pricing for your health care.
A lot of people are uncomfortable doing that themselves. They need an advocate.
Yes.
Can Solidarity HealthShare be an advocate?
Yes, we are an advocate. We have some of our members, like my wife's a great example. She loves going in there and kind of upsetting the apple cart, so to speak, when she's talking to providers, right? But not every member is like that. And so here's how the process works now. So let's say we have a member who needs a procedure done, and she can now call into Solidarity to our member care team and ask, hey, I got these two doctors I want to go to. I'm just trying to see which one. And since we're in the Christmas season, Advent season, I call it, are they on the nice or the naughty list? Meaning, are they going to give fair and reasonable and just pricing, or are they going to take advantage of us as cash payers? And now we have a system now where we can identify providers from around the country who play nice and who play naughty. And we can actually guide and direct our families to those who are really open to fair and just pricing in healthcare.
Wow. This transparency and coverage rule that as a result of an executive order that the president issued, this is a response to that executive order. The transparency and coverage rule, when was it supposed to go into effect? I realize it's now being challenged by the hospitals
right.
and insurance companies, but when was it supposed to go into effect?
It's a rule usually goes into effect 6 months after the rule is first promulgated or made public. So when that rule was first announced this last month, then you take 6 months from that, and that's when it's supposed to be implemented. Because the whole idea is you have notification under federal statutes to do regulations, but you also have to give time to implement that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the hospital system's counter-argument is it's just going to cost us too much money to do this, number one. And number two, you don't have authority to do this anyway. Those are their basic two arguments they have.
Yeah. When you have, let's say we didn't have the problem of resistance from the hospitals and insurance companies, what would this look like? What would they post? How would they contact people? Where would people get the information they needed to establish price comparisons?
Yeah, when they have, everything's very convoluted because they do publish some of their rates, but it's usually like in codes or certain things. Like, give you an example, if you have to get a knee replacement surgery, you just don't go and look at their website and say, knee replacement surgery is $17,000. It's on their website. You have to know what the procedures that go into it. You have to know the official legal language, you know, the medical jargon and everything like that. So what this will do is it's not going to be user-friendly, I think, for the average consumer.
Okay.
But there are companies out there right now like we use at Solidarity to go grab this data, the people that understand all this, you know, obfuscated coding and all this language and stuff like that. And then we can translate it for people and for our members to see exactly what things cost. So I think eventually, if the rule is upheld and they can keep pushing forward, you may get to the point where it's consumer, you know, the average consumer friendly, but right now it's not. And so you have to have other companies, like Solidarity has a company that pulls the data for us and translates it for us.
Okay. So they've got a coding system which makes sense to them, but to the consumer, it doesn't really look very helpful.
Exactly. And that's what you see a lot of times, too, when you get a medical bill. You know, like my son just had to go for a procedure, and the medical bill just said a word I didn't even know what it meant. And basically says, we did this, it's $3,000, right? And it's like, well, what did you do? So we picked up the phone and called back and said, no, we want an itemized bill that lists every single thing you did, you know, at this hospital visit. And so then what we can do is on behalf of our members at Solidarity, we take that bill, and number one, we analyze it to see if it's if there's any mistakes in it. And so just by there's average about 7 to 12% discount you can get just by taking out the mistakes and the duplicates in these hospital system bills. Then once we get a bill like that after it's been scrubbed, and that's what I call it, it's my term, after it's scrubbed, then we can try to determine what a fair and just price is for that hospital system. And then that's where the negotiation starts on behalf of that member. So like that bill that my son was just submitted, you know, a few $1,000, just by looking at it, we'll probably be able to get that bill down to about $700
to $800. Wow. You know, every time we talk, I'm reawakened to this problem and just how widespread it is. Do you have any idea how long it will this will take? I mean, what is the argument against this this rule? It looks to me it's an executive order. It's a result of an executive order. So they may,
right.
There may be some complaint about jurisdiction, but I'm just wondering what possible arguments could you bring up against a rule which is meant to properly inform consumers as to authentic pricing?
Yeah, I can just tell you what they're arguing in the lawsuit is basically that it's going to cost them too much money to figure out what things cost.
Oh,
that's the number one issue. You know, and to me, that's not a good argument.
No.
You know, and the second argument is that, you know, the White House doesn't have authority through regulation to do this.
And, right.
And that's where we're seeing there's a bill right now that has bipartisan support on surprise billing, which is a little different issue than we've been talking about, this transparency and overbilling. But I think it's going to take Congress to actually stand up to these insurance companies and to do the right thing to help the consumer.
Okay.
Because it seems like with the Not-So-Affordable Care Act, when it was passed, the only thing it has done is it's cost the average middle class more in their health care costs.
I know.
And to me, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, and I'll just give you an example right now. I'm just looking at our numbers here through the end of November on behalf of our families. We had $39.7 million worth of medical bills submitted. We were able to get them repriced down to $16.7 million, Al. So we were able to save our families roughly 58% off what the market rate was, you know, or whatever the published rate was. And so to me, that's what it's about.
Yep.
Is how do we reclaim our health care? Is we have to start with transparency, and we also have to make sure we protect conscience as well.
How do people get in touch with you and follow up on this conversation?
Yeah, they can reach us online at solidarityhealthshare.org. That's solidarityhealthshare.org. Or they can call us at 844-313-4999.
Very good. Brad, thanks. We'll talk again.
Yes, thank you, Al.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org. This program underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
Think of Christmas with no gifts, nothing, just another day of grinding poverty. But you can change all that. Making sure Christmas means something for kids in places like Haiti or Guatemala. I want to encourage your family, parish, or school to pack boxes of joy to send hope and love to children in dire need. Just take a gift box and pack it with toys and supplies to send a blessing that says, God loves you and so do I. Go to boxofjoy.org to learn more. That's boxofjoy.org, a ministry of Cross Catholic Outreach.
What do we mean when we say the church is the body of Christ? From the very beginning, Jesus shared with his apostles his mission, his joys and sufferings, and the mystery of the kingdom. The Catholic Catechism points out that Jesus indicated the intimacy of his union with his followers when he said, I am the vine, you are the branches. Abide in me, and I in you. When Jesus' visible presence was taken away from the apostles, they were not orphaned. Jesus sent them his Spirit. As a result, says the Catechism, communion with Christ is even more intense. Jesus mystically constitutes as his body all those brethren called together from every nation. The Church is not only gathered around Christ, she is united in him, in his body. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Food for the Journey, Sister Ann Shields, on the struggles of compromising that leads to a failure of growing with the Lord.
Brothers and sisters, you really can make decisions that bring clarity. Don't just live with the status quo. Don't just say, well, this is the kind of person I am. These are my strengths, these are my weaknesses. It's fine to say that. But so many of us, I think, feel like, well, this is the way I've always been, or this is my personality, or whatever. To excuse ourselves from confronting, am I really following the Lord, or do I have my feet in two different camps, the world and God, the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of the earth? Do I have my 2 feet in one place, or am I straddling? And if I'm straddling, you're always going to compromise. You're always going to try to find a way through that salves your conscience, but in fact, you're trying to serve two masters. And it won't work. So I want to urge you to take a look. Don't just listen to these readings and say, oh, I should think about this sometime. Think about it today.
Sister Ann Shields gives you food for the journey. Weekday mornings at 6:45 and again at 11:30 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. We've got a year before the 2020 presidential election, and it's interesting to look at polling of both Catholic and non-Catholic voters, even this early. And I'm glad to say that EWTN has gone ahead and conducted a poll along with Real Clear Politics, and you'll be surprised, I think, at some of the findings of this poll, not only in its political dimension, but also just in terms of how many Catholics are in fact engaged in the faith, what they believe. And joining me right now to discuss this is Dr. Matthew Bunsen. He's executive editor of EWTN News and a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, the author or co-author of more than 50 books, including the first English language biography of Pope Francis. And Matthew, good to have you with me.
Oh, very good to be with you, Al.
Let's talk about this poll. This was conducted by EWTN. And tell us a little bit about Real Clear Opinion. Who are they?
Yes, well, EWTN News has partnered with Real Clear Opinion Research, which is the polling arm of Real Clear Politics that everyone is obviously aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Real Clear Politics is one of those absolute go-to sites if you're tracking what's happening in American political life.
Right.
But they also have Real Clear Religion, Real Clear Sports,
yep,
and Real Clear Opinion.
Yep.
Real Clear Opinion Research is one of the most respected polling arms in the United States today.
Okay.
And one of the things we wanted to do was to work with them to really get a better sense of where Catholics are, as you say, a year out from the election, but also to have a better understanding in order to serve better where Catholics are in their faith lives and where they see themselves relative to culture. And I think the findings on the political side are one thing. The findings on that faith side are something else, but it is important to stress that the two of them really do come together in a number of significant ways in this poll. And this is the first of four polls that we'll be doing throughout the year.
Okay. So we've got a poll that deals with what Catholics believe and what they practice, and that includes their political attitudes. Is that right?
Yes. One of the things we wanted to do is to provide a baseline, so to speak, of where Catholics are politically heading into an election year. And we can also think of it this way, that we want to have a baseline for where Catholics are culturally and in their faith lives as we're also heading into a new decade.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we have many pressing issues and crises in the church right now. And what we wanted to do is to get just a sense of where Catholics are. And one of the big things that we found is that there is an enormous gulf in the area of belief and worship among American Catholics. And we can talk more about that. But that really is a key determiner in their outlook on cultural issues, but especially political issues, and likely how they're going to vote based on historical patterns. And then we can factor in as well other key elements in the division or how we can sample Catholics. That would include the disparities or differences between young Catholics and older Catholics, and, of course, white Catholics from Latino Hispanic Catholics and African American Catholics.
So let's talk a little bit about that then. What do we know? Catholic is one of those words that is really rubbery. You can stretch it to include those who, you know, I mean, if you, basically, I think in popular parlance, a person is Catholic if they say they're Catholic.
That's right.
You know,
in polling, one of the ways that it's phrased is you are a self-identified Catholic.
Right. Right. So,
and that is fraught with all sorts of vagueness.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we all know, we all have met people who retain the label Catholic years after they've ceased attending Mass on any regular basis, or if at all, or somebody who's hasn't been to confession in 45 years, they will still say they're Catholic in the same way that various ethnic groups identify. I mean, it's almost as being Catholic is like being Irish or Italian. You know, this is just, it's part of your identity, whether you affect practice the faith or not. And that becomes very frustrating for those of us who want to know what people believe and how it influences their faith. So when somebody says they're Catholic, I think most of us assume that there's at least some residual commitment to the truths of the faith, or some respect for the episcopacy, or, you know, some willingness to attend Mass now and then. And that there probably has, there's probably some overflow on how that affects their vote. But what are we finding out about Catholics? What percentage of Catholics actually adhere, or excuse me, what percentage of Catholics say that they accept all that the Catholic Church teaches?
Right. Well, you've hit on something really important, and this goes in a way to the heart of what we're trying to accomplish with this poll, and we're even going to drill more deeply in subsequent polls, as I was saying, that this one really helps give us a lay of the land, the landscape of where we are. What we have found is that those Catholics who accept all of the teachings of the Church, we're looking at about 17% of the total Catholic population.
Well, 17% state
that they accept all teachings of the Church. Now, we also have a significant category of Catholics who say that they accept most of the Church's teachings. That's a 41%. 25% say that they do not accept some of the Church's key teachings. 14% say that they are Catholic, but it has only a minor influence on their life. And then we have a tiny statistical group of 3% that consider themselves former Catholics, but still really identify as Catholic. The big number there, though, is that collective 58% of Catholic voters polled say that they accept all or most of the Church's teachings. That group is sharply divided from the remaining Catholics, and we're able to look even more closely at that 17%. But if we're looking at accept all or most, that is within the category of active Catholics is a very important polling group because of how different they are from the rest of the Catholic population, which looks almost in every possible way like their fellow Americans.
So, of those active Catholics, that would be roughly 58%. They actually exhibit differences from the general American mainstream?
Yes, they do, and also from their fellow Catholics. So think of it this way. Collectively, 39% of all Catholics go to Mass at least once a week. Only 49% believe in the real presence, which is actually higher than I had thought going into the poll. 13% go to confession at least once a year. When we look at the active Catholics, again, those who say they accept all or most of the Church's teaching, 66% believe in the real presence. I want to come back to that in a minute. 56% go to Mass at least once a week. 52% go to confession at least once a year. And happily 49%, should be higher. Nevertheless, 49% pray the rosary at least once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can still look at that number of 66% believing in the real presence. But if that is the number among those who accept all or most of the teachings of the church, that is abysmally low.
Right.
And Professor Robert George of Princeton, who was a guest on EWTN News Nightly last night, made the observation that this is a bitter indictment, really, of how we have failed in catechesis, that those who consider themselves most active in the church, in the life of the church, in their faith life, if only 66% actually believe in the real presence, we have a serious problem.
Yeah.
And that goes to one of the things that why this poll was also important, and the subsequent ones, and that this is almost a kind of diagnostic tool to understand where we are as a church, but also where we have our greatest crises. And in that way, then, we're helping to arm ourselves, our listeners, our viewers, and our readers, but also those who are in authority and who are experts in this, in finding prescriptions to solve these.
Yeah. Well, this is amazing because, of course, Catholic radio grew up, the whole Catholic radio movement grew up largely because of the felt need of many American Catholics, almost all laity, that they wanted a vehicle to help do the work of remedial catechesis. And when Mother Angelica gave the call to go out and buy stations or lease signals, Catholics began doing it. And again, I want to stress, largely Catholic laity began doing it because they were aware that many American Catholics simply didn't accept all that the Catholic Church taught. And they in many cases, it hadn't even been proposed to them. They simply had never heard about some of these teachings. And so what this tells us is that the work of Catholic radio, anyways, continues to be necessary. There's still two-thirds of those who can, if I got this right, two-thirds of those who consider themselves active Catholics, or excuse me, one-third of those who consider themselves active Catholics who still don't even accept the real presence. That's weird.
Yes, that, exactly. But it also is consistent with some of the polling that we've seen for a number of years.
Right.
One of the things that
right.
we have assumed and almost feared is that there is this immense dividing line, a fissure that exists among or between Catholics, that those who accept all the teachings or most of the teachings of the church versus those who don't. But then we also have to look very closely at those who consider themselves active Catholics and ask some very serious questions about what they actually believe, why, and the degree of their formation.
Yeah.
And as I was saying, unless we have this information, it's very difficult to understand what we need to do to fix some of these problems.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. So you asked questions about the real presence. What were the other doctrinally oriented questions?
Well, one of the things that we wanted to get to, because they're tied so closely and need to be, is rates of confession.
Yeah, yeah.
And for those who say that, those just reading, that those who are active in their faith life, or at least try to be, and I appreciated the honesty of many of the respondents in saying that they accept all or most of
yeah.
the teaching.
Sure.
And we have to realize that they are there and they have to be factored into this.
Absolutely.
Those saying that those 52% go to confession at least once a year, when we look at the other population, I'm not trying to say that they're unworthy or anything like that, but those for whom the Catholic faith was only a minor part of their lives, 17% actually believe in the real presence, and only 10% go to Mass once a week or more, and only 9% go to confession at least once a year.
Yeah.
So that tells us a lot. Now, 93% total among Catholics pray.
Now, that's
but
interesting.
7% of that little group pray the rosary at least once a month. So that tells us a lot.
All right. Hold it there, if you would, Matthew. We'll continue conversation. My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, executive editor of EWTN News. We're looking at this recent poll that conducted by EWTN and Real Clear Opinion.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Thanks to all of you who have been supporting Ave Maria Radio over the years. We did, however, fall short during our last drive. So unless we remedy this deficit, our operations will be limited next year. Please, don't let that happen. Catholic radio has been one of the most stable and fruitful lay-led movements since the Second Vatican Council. So please, go online to avemariaradio.net. Hit the donate button and renew your partnership in this work of the gospel. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck on the diminishing influence of God on our culture and ultimately in us.
One of the reasons why the church today is not having the impact it can have and should have is we've accommodated too much to the culture. Sunday has just become another day. The whole culture has just sort of transformed it and said, hey, there's nothing special about it. Now, the world is going to do what the world's going to do. But Christians have to be wise and not be conformed to the patterns of this world. That's a pattern in this world that's destructive. It's destructive because, one, it offends God, first of all. God says, keep holy the Sabbath. Keep holy the Lord's Day. And so many people have stopped going to church. Why? Because they're just busy. Why? Doing what? Playing golf, watching sports. Jesus loves our sentiments and our feelings, but he also looks at us seriously and says, do you seek to obey my commandments? Where are my commandments in your life? Are they a burden? Are you afraid they're going to take away your fun in life and are going to ruin your weekend? Do you resist them? Or do you hunger after them? Are they a light for your path?
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
How can parents raise faithful kids in a faithless world? A 50-year study of over 3,500 people found that the degree of parental warmth kids experience in religious households was the single biggest factor in determining whether children would become faithful adults. As I summarize in my book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide to Raising Faithful Kids, children are most likely to become faithful adults when they've experienced the faith as the source of the warmth in their homes. The same study found that rates of faith retention in kids skyrocketed when religious dads took point on practices that contributed to a warm, faithful household. Things like generous affection, maintaining strong family rituals, and gentle approaches to discipline. God created parents to give kids a physical sign of his love. The more warmth our kids experience in our presence, the more warmly they'll feel toward the God who loves them through us. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
You don't think it'll happen to you twice. First, it was a fire. My agent was right there and helped me rebuild. Then the tornado destroyed everything again. Both times, my independent agent and auto owners took care of me like someone takes care of family.
For whatever lies ahead, we're always there. Auto Owners Insurance.
For your no-obligation quote, please call Choice Insurance at 734-641-4200.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a non-profit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, taking a look at the recent poll conducted by EWTN and Real Clear Opinion, a serious survey, learning that only 39% of all Catholics, again, self-identified Catholics, go to Mass at least weekly. 49% believe in the real presence. A mere 13% go to confession at least once a year. Among the most active Catholics, and that means those who accept all or most church teachings, 66% of them believe in the real presence. 56% attend Mass at least once a week. 52% go to confession at least once a year, and 49% pray the rosary at least once a month. Now, there's a lot here that's absolutely fascinating, and I know you're going to be unpacking it with subsequent polls. Let me jump to the political dimension of this right now. Among active Catholics, and again, when we mean active Catholics in this survey, we're talking about those who say they believe all of the church teaching or most church teaching. And where are they lining up politically?
Well, it, just as we see this gulf between active Catholics and those for whom the faith is less important, there is that gulf also politically. Overall, those who are active Catholics give President Trump an approval rating of about 52%.
Okay.
That is very high compared to others who are significantly lower. His overall job approval among Catholics is at 44%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's an interesting qualifier in here as well. This is why this poll actually has good news and bad news for both Democrats and Republicans, and we can't stress enough that this is a snapshot a year out. And so we're going to have more clarity, I think, as we progress through the election year, as really the electorate, especially Catholic voters, are becoming more focused on what's happening politically.
Mm-hmm.
The levels of engagement, however, in the poll are themselves quite impressive, in the high upper 80s of people who are aware and are really focused on where we are politically. Obviously, impeachment tends to focus the mind of a lot of people. But at the moment, 53% of Catholics, this is all Catholics, are either planning to vote for Trump, which I think is about 34%, or they're open to the possibility of voting for him again. So that's very good news for the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
When you have over 50%, now let's go back to 2016, Trump effectively split the Catholic vote with Hillary Clinton. Depending upon your poll, he carried anywhere from 50 to 52% of the Catholic vote. So he's well positioned, at least, in terms of the Catholic vote heading into 2020. Bad news, or if you want to put it reverse, the good news as far as Democrats are concerned, is that he is actually trailing all of his prospective rivals. Two in particular in the primaries right now among the Democrats are Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. They are highest among Catholic voters, like 29 and 24%. But Trump loses to both Sanders and Biden by a pretty significant margin, in the average of about 52 to 39 or 40%.
That's all Catholics, right? All self-identified
Catholics. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's much, much tighter when you look at head-to-head matchups among active Catholics. But the other thing to note politically is that Trump is still trailing, but much closer to all of the other Democratic potential nominees. Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, all of them are beating Trump right now. But the margin is either within the margin of error or close enough. And none of them outside of Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden can actually get over 50%. Now, as we know, the political math is that somebody has to be over 50% or they're in big trouble. And it's very difficult, I think, for a candidate at this point to be that close to Trump in what is supposed to be a very difficult electoral season for him.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of dynamics, and every election and every polling cycle is going to bring its own surprises.
So let's talk then about, did you poll active Catholics, by which you mean those who accept all that the Church teaches or most all that the Church, or yes, most all that the Church teaches?
Yeah, typically Trump does consistently better with active Catholics, and the more faithful the Catholics, the better he does. So we can sort of bracket it that way. Part of the reason that Trump actually has that 53% reelect number overall is that he's so high among active Catholics. But part of the underlying reasons for his popularity with active Catholics is that he has, for the most part, stuck to some of the key promises that he made on things like life, religious liberty, and other things. So he has worked hard, I think, over the last 3 years to fulfill at least some of the campaign promises to what is, I think, the most dedicated group that is supporting him.
Do you have a percentage of Trump approval among active Catholics?
Yes, well, his overall approval among active Catholics, I think, is about 53%.
Okay, that's active Catholics.
Yeah, yes, I think he has a 52% job approval among active Catholics. So that, again, is much higher than we're seeing not just among all Catholics, as I was saying, is at 44%.
Gotcha.
But also among those who are less active, where he begins dropping into the low 40s and into the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that number is matched, that 52% job approval among active Catholics is matched only by evangelical Protestants, who give him currently a 60% approval rating.
Okay.
So that tells you, as Carl Cannon, who is one of the Washington bureau chief for Real Clear Politics, makes note in his own analysis piece of the poll, and as he also has said to EWTN News Nightly, that we're reaching the point now where we might even think about the Christian vote for Trump rather than necessarily the Catholic vote, in the sense
right.
that there is this solid division that separates out active Catholics and evangelical Protestants in one group and all the other Catholics and all the other Protestants
right.
in another.
Yeah.
And that's something I think we're going to have to keep track of as we go forward.
Yeah, very good point. Now, did you poll for what political issues are most important to Catholics and most important to active Catholics?
Yes. What we have found is, as one might expect, some of the big ticket issues for Catholics are similar to what we see with Americans in general. One of those is the economy. We're looking at things like national defense, things that would potentially poll in Trump's favor.
Okay.
So we right now have a president who, again, in a very tough electoral environment, is nevertheless presiding over an extremely healthy economy.
Right.
And that's something that matters to a lot of voters. Issues that some would imagine are also important, like health care. That's another major concern. We're looking at, I think, about 63% among Catholics. That's a big issue. National security. Immigration is up there, but it's not one of the highest priorities for Catholic voters. Same thing with things like taxes. The environment and climate change, which would seemingly be significant to Catholic voters, because we hear a great deal about Laudato Si and other things,
mm-hmm.
That is not polling especially high with this with the Catholic samples that we have.
Is that among active Catholics or among Catholics in general?
Both, really.
Okay.
With the climate change is at only about a 44 important as a major concern.
Okay.
That, I think, tells you something in terms of how some of the issues, at least, again, a year out,
right.
Would seem to be playing, at least strategically, to Trump's advantage. But things can change, as we know.
We recently had a short dust-up at the National Conference of Catholic Bishops in Baltimore over the question of abortion. Is abortion the preeminent social justice issue?
That's right.
How does it show up on the polling, abortion?
Well, overall, among Catholics, abortion itself as an issue, as a sort of a deal breaker, the more faithful you become, the more important it becomes. Overall, among Catholics, about 45% would say it would be a deal breaker and I would not support the candidate, which is a surprisingly high number. That number increases again with faithful Catholics. One other topic, though, that I was surprised to see emerge is the question of religious tolerance and also the influence of religion in American life. I say that because that really isn't polled very often, and that was one of the things that we wanted to discover, because that's another area where Trump, I think, has done a lot, at least as far as active Catholics are concerned. And what we found is that overall, there is real worry among American Catholics and people at large about the decline of the influence of religion in America.
Really?
And the numbers themselves are in the 60 percentile, that people are becoming much more intolerant of religion in America. They're also saying that people in America have become overly sensitive, that 81% of all Catholics believe that.
Wow.
There's also People are becoming less tolerant of religion. We see that 70% of all Catholics say that, again, with much higher numbers even among faithful or active Catholics. And 61% of Catholics say that the religious values should play a more important role in our society. And at the same time, the Christian values should play a significant role. That's even higher than just religious values. 62% of Catholics would argue that Christian values should have a more important role in our society. And one of the really takeaway numbers that also I found is that 84% of all Americans and 86% of all Catholics still consider religion to be important in their own lives. So one of the points that I make in a couple of pieces that I've written, sort of reflecting on this poll, is that the vast majority of Americans still consider us one nation under God, even if at the moment we don't seem particularly indivisible.
Interesting. Very good. And does that change much when it comes to active Catholics?
Yes. Well, the numbers, again, keep going up. But the one outlier in this, and this is something that needs to be factored in as we're going forward, not just in this election, but everyone after, especially among Catholics, is that only 43% of young Catholics, and this is across the board, would say that the role of Christian values needs to be higher. That is consistent with a lot of the polling that we're seeing throughout this, that the youngest sample group, the 18 to 34-year-olds, essentially the millennials and a little beyond that, they trend much more democratic, they trend much more liberal, and they are one of the reasons why there is a kind of lodestone that President Trump is facing. Now, why that matters in particular is that this will become the first election where there are more younger voters potentially heading out to the polls than older ones among Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
So we are beginning to see a sea change. Now, the question, sort of the cultural one, but also a religious one, is people, as we know, tend to become more conservative as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we're all going to be charting for the next year.
Well, we'll have to really follow this carefully. I also want to make sure we talk about the role that the abuse crisis has played on Catholic attitudes. I know you did some polling on that, but we'll have to wait for another day to do that, Matthew. Thank you so much. This is fascinating.
God bless.
God bless. Matthew Bunsen, we'll have this poll for you.
Do you have a mid to large size business and are looking for a full service marketing and advertising company? Geektown USA is making the challenging world of digital much simpler to understand. It's always good to have a geek on your side, so let us help you with your branding, website, and digital marketing. Visit geektownusa.com, and when you contact us, mention Ave Maria Radio. Geektown USA, where creative marketing meets smart technology. Visit geektownusa.com today.
During the 2 days of the Democrat presidential candidate debates held this past July at the Fox Theater in Detroit, the city and its police force imposed draconian restrictions that prevented anyone with a message that conflicted with the policies of the Democrat candidates, particularly messages that conflicted with the candidates' radical pro-abortion policies, from reaching the debate participants and attendees. As a result, we sued the city and several of its police officers and the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan for silencing the speech of our pro-life clients, Created Equal and its co-founder, Mark Harrington. Indeed, the right to freedom of speech enshrined in the First Amendment is not a right to catharsis. It is a right to meaningfully express one's message in order to influence public opinion and to affect public policy. Not surprisingly, the liberal city of Detroit imposed restrictions that had the intended effect of sanitizing and cleansing the areas immediately in front of and adjacent to the Fox Theater of any messages that were critical of the Democrat presidential candidates and the positions and policies they supported. In particular, these instructions ensured that our clients' message, specifically including their pro-life signs, would be hidden from the CNN camera shots, the viewers of the debates, the candidates, and those who attended the Fox Theater for the debates. Our Constitution does not permit such treatment. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. I appreciate EWTN working with Real Clear Opinion on this poll. But I'm looking forward to the subsequent polls as well. I'm interested in learning more about the relationship between all those Catholics, that 17% of the Catholic population, that accepts all that the Church teaches, and how that group relates to the much larger group, I can't remember what it was now, was it 35, 40, 41%, of Catholics who say they're active, they go to Mass regularly, but they don't accept all that the Church teaches. Especially for the work that we do in Catholic media, Catholic television, Catholic radio, our various platforms, I think it's important for us to learn how to talk with our fellow Catholics about the things that divide us. And again, I think many people would say they don't accept all that the Church teaches, to be honest, because they actually don't entirely know what the Church teaches, and they've never seen it presented in all its truth, its beauty, and its goodness. So I'm looking forward to those things in the future. We'll have more information in the Cresta Guest Archives. You want to follow up on these questions about healthcare rules and the Catholic vote? We've got another hour coming up. Stay with me.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.